I'm going to be doing something this morning that's way ahead of time. I'm going to be playing for the first time on commercial radio, really any radio, parts of the new Cusco album, Apurimac 3, that I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for, and it's here, and oh my, is it good. So you will hear portions, no doubt, of that. It's a return to Native America, Apurimac 3, and let me tell you, it is something. All right, the beginning of Jim Keith's book says this stuff is black, black, black. That's a quote not of the author, but of Admiral Stansfield Turner, former director of the CIA. He said this stuff is black, black, black. And I wonder, Jim, was he referring to the men in black? When did he get a question, Jim, that, about the men in black that caused a retort of that sort?
In fact, it wasn't a reference to the men in black. It was a reference to black operations, undisclosed government operations that are funded covertly. Better that he would have been talking about the men in black, but unfortunately not.
Uh-huh. Well, I gave you my little scenario of what I thought the men in black might be. Last night I had Colonel Philip Corso on. And no matter what you believe about Philip Corso, it's hard to not be moved. And did you happen to hear the program?
In fact, I didn't.
You didn't? All right.
No.
He is a lieutenant colonel who was at the very highest levels of government, even in the White House, who has written a book called The Day After Roswell. It basically broken down, he received materials from Roswell and seeded them into American industry. It is an absolutely incredible story. And I'm talking, of course, about artifacts of an alien crash or several alien crashes. And, I mean, here's a fellow who was in the very, very highest levels of government telling his story. The book is on the bestseller list. If you believe the colonel, who is 82 years old and has no reason to lie, and if you believe that, then a leap to believe that there are men who will come and take care of any evidence of this sort of thing before it gets public, well, that's easy to believe. Is that what the men in black are?
You know, Art, it's surprisingly close in terms of my viewpoint. I don't claim to be omniscient about this subject or anything, but one of the problems that people have in understanding all kinds of strange events is that they try to pigeonhole them in one category.
Right.
Whereas most of them have more than one source, and that applies to UFOs and angels, Bigfoot, and it includes the men in black. And For my true opinion about the men in black, I think that these encounters have at least four types. And those include the government, that has been trying to shut up witnesses since at least the early 50s. Much as UFO buffs don't like to hear it, I think there's delusion about this too. Some UFO buffs can be kind of paranoid.
Well, it's also a very easy way, Jim, to explain evidence you had, like the fish that got away. You know, I had this incredible evidence, you can weave a tale. And in the middle of the night, like thieves, the men in black came and took it.
Sure.
Here's my story. I wish I had the evidence, but the men in black have got it.
And I wish I had a dime for every time I've heard that story, too. You know, I mean, a lot of researchers lost their smoking gun about Roswell that way, you know.
Exactly.
But actually, there are hoaxers in the UFO community, and that includes many prominent UFO researchers. And then, in addition to that, surprising me as I did this research is that there's apparently a supernatural connection, that there really is a supernatural men in black, and that's a category that we seem to know a whole lot about, but at the same time cannot explain whatsoever. As far as the government having this kind of alien connection that has been fed into the technology and so forth, it's quite possible. But I always use this kind of Occam's razor thing. I have not seen any proof of that. I do believe that there are all kinds of advanced government programs and that there have been government aircraft that conform to the shape of flying saucers, but I've never seen that single bit of data or that one that got away that proves that these advanced technologies come from aliens.
Jim, what led you to even consider writing a book like this, which by its very title would, I would assume, to chronicle what history we know of the Men in Black, I mean, casebook after all. So what led you to be interested in this?
Boy, that's quite a question. You know, I got interested in UFO and the occult at the age of 7. That was in 1957. And I believed every word that these wild, contactees like Adamski and Truman Bertram had to say about their flights to Venus and so forth. And I've continued to have an interest in the paranormal. Now, why I specifically dug into the Men in Black is really for the obvious reason. It's very interesting. And that's how I choose my next book at any given time, is what is piquing my own interest so that my research is really more like play than it is like doing a day job.
Now, there we connect. That's me, too. It's more like play than a job at all. So you just sort of became intrigued. Is the Men in Black a theory that rivals the black helicopter business going around now?
I think it rivals it in popularity. And since this new movie comes out, which seems, I have not seen it, but it seems like a glorified Ghostbusters, I think that the Men in Black is going to overtake the black helicopters in terms of people tossing these references about and so forth. As far as any connection, it is rather minimal. I know of one or two cases of black helicopters that have been connected to Men in Black, but that's out of literally hundreds of these black helicopters.
All right, so pretty much the Men in Black are a separate case.
I would say so.
All right, then let me start with what I probably should finish with, and that is, you've studied it, you're way ahead of almost all of us in this area. The Men in Black, is it real? Are they real? Are there really Men in Black? What have you concluded?
Absolutely there are. But there are also fake Men in Black. You know, it's very interesting. I think the same thing is true of really any paranormal phenomenon. There are real instances of this, and there are fake ones. And, you know, my own belief is that the paranormal sometimes spurs the government to simulate these things to really twist people's minds.
Yes. I've frequently wondered about that.
Yeah.
Whether the government has an interest in promulgating the whole idea of the paranormal as a diversion of some sort. Who knows? You can weave all kinds of fantasy into what we're seeing. I do know that certain aspects of the paranormal occur. Manipulated? Real? I don't know yet. I think there is a real paranormal. I think there are really things that occur that we cannot explain. And as you point out, I think some are faked.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I believe this is really confirmed by CIA and FBI reports. Really at the beginning of people's interest in UFOs, right around late 1940s, early 1950s, where they talk about infiltrating groups of UFO aficionados and to investigate them because they may be up to subversive things. Now,
really?
Yeah. Now, going over literally hundreds of these Men in Black encounters, I've come to the conclusion that they involve copycatting, and that is that government men wear black suits, drive black cars, they simulate paranormality, and I think there's one reason for this.
What?
Well,
I've always wondered about that. I mean, you're right. They do wear black suits. They do drive in black cars. How come?
Well, let's say you have seen a UFO, or let's say that you research this material and are getting fairly close to an answer.
Okay.
A government man walks up to your door in a black suit with a black hat. Maybe he's got weird eyes. Maybe he's got long fingers, as many of these guys do. What it does is it scares the living daylights out of UFO observers.
Well, you make a good point. I mean, if your local government guy drove up in an orange car with a striped tie and some sort of loud sport jacket, you probably wouldn't take him nearly so seriously as mm-hmm. if he were dressed, as you point out, in black with a black hat and a big old black car. When you see something like that coming, you're going, oh,
yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it all seems pretty horrible, especially if they threaten you or threaten your family, and you're not sure if they're from another planet or not. I think it's a very effective way to shut UFO witnesses out.
Well, let me tell you, Jim, I've had visits from government agents, various alphabet-type organizations connected to the work that I do here, and they are... even though they seem easygoing and very nice guys, there is no question about it, Jim. I'm just talking about normal government agents here. In black suits, you know they're carrying, they've got a sort of a serious, we're here and you don't want to mess with this kind of attitude about them. And even though they're very nice, and very calm, there's no question about the fact that there is an aura of intimidation that you could cut with a knife.
You don't want to mess with these guys, even if they don't have these eyes that bug out of their head or a weird kaleidoscope unit that they train on your eyes. You know, I mean, yeah, you're saying they're intimidating enough.
I'm saying just regular government agents.
Even without some of the dramatizations that the men in black sometimes do, these guys are bad enough to fool with.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, encountering what you seem to be. Let's get down to it. I mean, casebook. There are some cases that you obviously believe are the best stories or the best evidence or might be genuine. What would they be?
Well, I don't know. There are many good cases. One of the most interesting one that always kind of sticks in my craw happened to a Dr. Hopkins in Maine in 1976.
Uh-huh.
And he had been hypnotically regressing an alleged UFO abductee. And he was met or contacted by a man in black who was bald, had dead white skin, and no lips. The lips were simulated with lipstick.
Oh.
Okay. This man in black discussed the UFO abduction case that the doctor was digging into in a monotone. He sounded like a robot. And then he apparently used ESP. He said, doctor, you have a dime and a penny in your pocket. The doctor reached in, and that's what he did have in his pocket. The man in the black told him to hold the penny in his open hand, and as the doctor looked at the penny, it turned silver, then blue, and then it slowly dematerialized. There was no chance for sleight of hand or legerdemain. The doctor was holding this and looking close while it slowly dematerialized.
Wow.
Now, this man in black asked Dr. Hopkins if he knew of another famous UFO abductee, actually Barney Hill.
Oh, yes.
He had recently died from a heart attack, and Hopkins responded that he did. And the man in black told him that it was no heart attack that had taken Barney Hill, but the same thing had happened to Barney Hill's heart that had happened to that penny in the doctor's hand. And
wow.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we are at a break point. Jim, when we come back, I want you to tell that one more time.
Oh, really?
I like penny stories.
All
yes.
Right.
So we're going to go through that one more time. The story of Dr. Hopkins. Do you recall yesterday when Colonel Corso said the alien bodies rapidly decomposed? Ed Dame said disappeared. And did you just hear what Jim said? We'll be right back. Men in Black tonight. Going back now to my guest, Jim Keith. Or am I doing that a bit prematurely? No, I'm not. Back to Jim Keith. Jim, the story of Dr. Hopkins is one of the coolest stories I've heard in a while. And it meshes with a lot of what we've been talking about. Would you please tell it one more time?
Sure. One of the reasons I like the Dr. Hopkins story is it wasn't anecdotal. When I received it, it was done in very much detail, and this detail was received from Dr. Hopkins' kids, because Hopkins was not talking after this happened. But it took place in Maine in 1976. And Hopkins had been doing some UFO research on his own and regressing a an alleged UFO abductee, when a man showed up at his doorstep, and this was a man in black. This guy was bald. He had very pasty white skin, and apparently he possessed no lips. The lips seem to have been painted on with lipstick, and oddly enough, that's a detail that's repeated in other stories where the facial features are simulated.
Sounds almost like a mime.
Yeah, could be. Could be, or a clone. But this man in black talked about with the doctor about his research, and then he told the doctor that there was a dime and a penny in the doctor's pocket. He reached in, and that's what was there. The man in black instructed the doctor to take the penny in his open hand, and as the doctor looked at the penny with no sleight of hand, this all took place quite slowly. It turned silver, then blue, and then it dematerialized. And the way that the doctor expressed that this had taken place was that he felt the absence of the weight of the penny on his hand. This man in black asked Hopkins if he had ever heard of a well-known UFO abductee, Barney Hill, who had recently died from a heart attack. And Hopkins said that he had heard of Barney Hill. And the man in black informed Dr. Hopkins that, in fact, this was no heart attack, but the same thing had happened to Barney Hill's heart as had happened to the penny in Dr. Hopkins' hand. And that was the last that Hopkins was ever involved in UFO research. He burned all of his tapes, got rid of all of his books, and like I said, the only reason we know about this is because his kids were willing to talk about it.
All right, it would be useful, and we may not know, what exactly Dr. Hopkins was working on when this occurred?
In fact, I have the name of the abductee who Hopkins was hypnotically regressing, but I just don't have it at my fingertips. I believe it's in the book.
All right, so he was regressing somebody,
mm-hmm.
and we can imagine that he was getting close to information that obviously they did not want out.
Right, and that's a familiar theme, of course, with the Men in Black, is that people find out about the secret of the UFOs, or they see a particularly spectacular sighting, and then they are encouraged in no uncertain terms to keep their mouths shut about it.
Well, you know, I can imagine that if somebody like that came to my door, assuming that I lived through the initial sighting of this thing, and it placed it, you know, did that to me with a penny in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
I would be inclined to go along with Dr. Hopkins. Now, it's easy to sit out here and for the audience to say, "Oh, wouldn't have stopped me, baloney." If that occurred to you, you'd think 25 times when something occurred in your very own hand, and you were told, "Well, that's what happened to somebody else's heart," and the obvious direct indication is this could be your heart.
Sure, you know, us fearless UFO researchers and researchers into conspiracy, you don't really know how you would react when push came to shove, and there was a truly significant threat.
Well, I think I know how I'd react. I'd cave big time, assuming I lived through the experience. That would say to you, stop now, or you're not going to live to do any sort of further investigation whatsoever. You're simply going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems to be the message. All right, well, that was a fascinating case. What else have you for us?
Well, you know, really any number of things, but one aspect that I would like to talk about is sort of UFOs created by government. And I think there are a lot of reasons to believe that the U.S. and maybe other governments have been, in fact, since the early 1950s, testing these kind of exotic aircraft that the men in black might want to shut people up about. And
all right, here's a mystery for you, Jim.
Sure.
You've seen, I'm sure, coverage of the recent lights over Phoenix.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I had a newspaper person down in Arizona sent me a story of his, indicating that some flight or squadron of planes had been flying over Phoenix at night, and this explains everything. The problem is that nobody, the military, the flight controllers at the Phoenix Tower, saw anything on radar. And so it's a pretty good example. I mean, here you've got an area of 2.5 million people and a gigantic sighting above that city that lasted not for a split second, but for 106 minutes. Now, what does that tell us? Are they trying to, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to provoke us?
Well, you know, I don't claim to be an expert on that Arizona Triangle, but here's what I do know is, as you well know, Art, there have been literally thousands of sightings of this triangular craft worldwide.
Yes.
Going back to about 1990.
Yes.
There were about 2,000 sightings in Belgium. Now, in fact, one of the places where this triangular craft is most often seen is around secret testing bases in California, particularly down by Lancaster.
I have seen one, Jim.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard you speak of that. And actually, a military official in Northern California admitted that the triangle is a government craft. He called it a transport. Also, according to Aviation Week in 1991, they said that diamond-shaped and triangular configurations are the trend now. Now, like I said, I'm no expert on this, but this would lead me to believe that there is a technology that we don't know about that includes this very slow-moving, huge craft, and that it's not alien.
Perhaps not. But Jim, it's a big story either way. What flew over me? No,
sure.
It didn't fly over me, Jim. It floated over
mm-hmm.
me. What came over me was defying gravity,
mm-hmm.
Doing about 30 miles an hour, 150 feet from one point of the triangle to the other, very low, about 150 feet above me, you know, classic stuff, close encounters of the third kind, stars blank out, moon blanks out, this thing passes directly over our head,
yeah.
And so that's technology that I don't know that we have right now.
That kind of blows my mind as well, but I got a call from a lady who lives just outside of Lancaster about 6 weeks ago, and she lives right in a nexus of about five different secret testing bases down there. And she said that she saw a huge aircraft at very low level, perhaps at about 50 feet. Now, this thing was glowing, but it did one heck of a big circle around her area of tracked homes,
yes.
Moving at an extremely slow speed. So I think the story here is an amazing new, perhaps, anti-gravity technology. But again and again, I never see this smoking gun linking it to the grays with the big eyes.
All right, let's move back to the Men in Black for a second. Your book begins with an interesting angle, the black arts, demons, witches,
yeah.
That sort of thing.
Sure.
How does that fit in?
Well, you know, these guys, the Men in Black, just as they're described today, have manifested since my earliest cases, I think, go back to the 1500s. And back in those days, they were always referred to as agents of the devil and were usually seen in the context of witchcraft rituals and satanic sabbats.
Really?
And that sort of thing. As we went forward and as we went into the irreligious 20th century, people started interpreting these guys differently, and they were more often seen with UFOs and shutting up witnesses of UFOs, and when people were hassled by the Men in Black, they didn't immediately think, here's an envoy of Satan. They thought of them as extraterrestrials.
All right, I want to read you something. Take a moment out and read you a letter that I've got from a listener, if you wouldn't mind, and see if this fits anywhere into your Men in Black, all right?
Sure.
Art, I want to tell you a true story of the Men in Black. My father had fought cancer for several years. In the fight, he had lost his nose to surgery and had to wear a fake one made for him. He lost all of his teeth and half his jawbone. He suffered through radiation to be told that it was all gone, and 30 days later there was nothing more that radiation could do to save him. Then he went through chemotherapy, sickness only to reach the point that the doctors were continuing to keep him believing it was working. Next, my mother died of a heart attack 2 months after my father was expected to be dead. But he wasn't. But now he was feeling the loss of my mother, and after he had made plans to see that she was taken care of, after he was gone, I can tell you all of this because I've got to know what happened next. The only thing keeping him alive was his insistence that he would see the grave marker installed that he picked out for my mother and himself. As you know, partners frequently go together. I added that. I took him to the gravesite in a wheelchair less than a week before he died. One evening I was sitting at home with my wife and small children when my sister called from my father's house saying she was frightened, wanted me to come right over. When I got there, Dad was insisting that my sister and his caregiver take him home. Of course, he was already home. When I asked where home was, he gave me the address of where he grew up. Insisted I take him there. I really couldn't do that since the house had been sold after the death of his mother. The night later, and we decided that he would be more comfortable at the hospital than at home, the next day I went to see him, he was still wanting to go home. The next evening, my sister and I were with him. He began to talk to us and tell us he was sorry that he had been so much trouble, and he realized how out of it he had been recently. I told him it was all right. He told me he was glad that they had come to visit him and set him straight. I said, "Who came to visit?" And he said, "The men in black." I asked him who they were. And he said he didn't know. But they came to visit him, and they were going to give him a message. Or did give him a message. I asked, "What was the message?" He told me they would return soon to take him to be with my mother. Of course, she was now dead. This is, and it goes on, and it's from Ron. Thank you, Ron. Does that sound at all familiar, Jim?
Yeah, we're talking really an event that is more usually framed in olden days. With the witchcraft connection, or these guys are often seen in, for instance, in a religious area like Ireland, where they're observed at graveside and so forth. So that fits in perfectly, actually.
All right, again, the demonic connection, that goes, you're saying that is where it began around, you think, in the 1500s.
Right.
And they were actually described as men in black even then?
Oh, yeah. In very much in detail, you know, they're black silk suits, and they're black hats, and oftentimes these guys then wouldn't be, of course, driving the black Cadillacs, but they would be driving black coaches or black cars. So it's fairly seamless up until today, but these days I guess they've changed their mode of transportation.
No reason the modern ones, I suppose, shouldn't use automobiles.
It is odd, which is something that is almost too obvious to say about the men in black. They're really an odd collection.
I assume that you have more stories yourself of the appearance of these men.
Yeah, I do.
Enough that you have become convinced yourself there is something to it.
Indeed, and that was really the way it took place. Was I started out initially extremely skeptical about this whole subject, but after reviewing dozens or perhaps at least 100 cases on the men in black, I found that I could explain a great deal of it. I could explain a lot of it as government. I could explain a good deal of it as hoaxers. I could say the detail on this sounds like this UFO buff was imagining all this, but still there was this residue of paranormality. And frankly, I'm not really known as a researcher into the paranormal. I mean, my book, like Black Helicopters Over America, is extremely down to earth and deals with government conspiracy. But with the men in black, they kind of, they made me sit up and take notice about this paranormal aspect.
Well, I will ask you also about Black Helicopters.
Sure.
You know, it's been a favorite for a long time.
Sure.
But the men in black, maybe you can break it down for me. What percentage of the men in black case histories would you say lean toward the paranormal?
I would say a lot of them have paranormal trappings, but the ones that I find unexplainable really probably don't amount to more than 5%. The greatest source, I think, really would be delusion. People see somebody dressed all in black, which is rather common, and then they're feeling rather spooked anyway that day, and they interpret it as a man in black. After that, I would say the government has an involvement, and although it sounds a little bit crazy, reading case after case like this, you finally draw the conclusion that, yeah, the government, in order to more thoroughly shut up witnesses, is counterfeiting this men in black thing. But as far as things that really look paranormal and things that really can't be explained, they are the exception.
Hmm. Well, again, I've had government guys visit, and they are intimidating all by themselves. But what you have described, how many of them, for example, in the case of Dr. Hopkins, appear to come without human faces? We're talking about descriptions here. Are there many like that?
I've probably got at least 25 cases like that.
25 cases?
Yeah.
When we get back, I want to ask you how you go about collecting Men in Black stories, interviewing people, that sort of thing, how you even begin to build a database for this sort of book. Fascinating. All right, Jim, hold on. We'll be right back. From the high desert, an area near Dreamland, it's just over the hill there. I'm Art Bell, and you're listening to the Independent American CBC Radio Network.